This is On the Media. I'm Mike Pesca. Some say the star of the new documentary, Page One, inside the New York Times, is the newspaper itself. Others say it's David Carr, the media columnist who's part rascal, part sage. I say the real star is the hands-free headset. All the most dramatic moments are punctuated when a journalist rips off their hands-free headset. We also meet at least one journalist who isn't a public figure and whose byline Times readers might not know. That's media editor Bruce Headlam, who I asked, what did you learn from watching the film?
I learned I roll my eyes far too much. I learned what I look like walking from behind, which is something I frankly could have lived without. You know, honestly, I was generally happy because I looked at how my reporters were acting and more how we managed to coalesce around a story. We tend to look at journalism as the triumph of the kind of dogged individual who, you know, fights all opposition and the establishment in order to get that story out there. But it's a group activity.
No matter what you think of the overall documentary, there were a few moments where we got to see a story, in fact, a few stories essentially being made. So first we have David Carr, who's a media columnist. Here he is in an interview. He's writing a column on Vice magazine. There's the founder of Vice, a guy named Shane Smith, and he's this is a magazine that drips with hipster cred, and Shane Smith is this rough-hewn guy, and he's talking about doing some reporting on Liberia.
Everyone talked to me about cannibalism. And the New York Times, meanwhile, is writing about surfing. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? I'm not going to talk about surfing. I'm going to talk about cannibalism because that me
just
up.
Just a sec, time out. Before you ever went there, we've had reporters there reporting on genocide after genocide, just because you put on a safari helmet doesn't give you the right to insult what we do. So continue.
Carr interrupting him, essentially sticking up for the New York Times. You think Carr's playing for the cameras when he does that?
No, because I've seen David in similar situations. That's David when you talk about the New York Times that way. There's all kinds of different ways to interview people. David comes in as a character. As he says, he sounds a little weird, and he does sound a little weird. But that's his technique of getting people to talk.
All right. The next piece that I want to talk about is sort of a dog that doesn't bark story. NBC characterized troop movements in Iraq as the end of combat operations.
Tonight, U.S. combat troops are pulling out of Iraq. And Richard, I understand your reporting of this at this hour tonight constitutes the official Pentagon announcement, correct?
Yes, it is. Right now, we are with the last American combat troops.
We've all this video of different departments in the New York Times saying, you know, what is this? Where are they getting this? The documentary shows a lot of discussions, you guys debating it internally.
Did you watch NBC?
Yeah.
I thought it was hallucinatory. Brian Williams says to Richard Engel that your report here from the field amounts to the official Pentagon announcement of the end of combat troops in Iraq.
I don't know that there was. I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult.
No.
Was there some sort of official?
Tom Shanker in Washington is right now calling the Pentagon again. I mean, I think
you would think is the war overnight.
NBC was saying one thing, and what we were hearing from both the White House and the Pentagon was something else, which is the war officially ends at the end of the month. We will still have 50 to 55,000 combat troops involved. I mean, their primary mission changes, but this felt strangely artificial to us.
Well, the next day, we see a reporter, Brian Stelter, wrote a Media Decoder column. As combat troops leave Iraq, news media ride along, and his first sentence was, the combat mission in Iraq doesn't end officially until August 31st, but viewers and readers could be forgiven for thinking it ended tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does talk about how different news organizations decided to play it.
Yes.
And your news organization really avoided phrases like end of combat operations, where some of the other ones, the LA Times and the Post, use that in its headline.
Well, I suppose that happens all the time. It's, you know, there are those certain kinds of journalists who, when asked at the end of their career, their great achievements list all the things they didn't put in the newspaper. I'm not sure this is one of these. I'm glad we did it the way we did. I think the next day there was enough reaction to both NBC and the other newspapers that we could take a more dispassionate look.
The presence of the documentary, has it given you occasion to kind of revisit any of those stories or just even to casually say, well, you know, we got that one right? What kind of conversations have resulted?
Narcissistic as it sounds, some of the parts that affect me are looking at the cutbacks, listening to Richard talk about the business at that point. Richard Perez Pena, who was my newspaper reporter at the time, said nobody was pessimistic enough. You sat around and literally had no idea what was happening. There were articles about the possible demise of the New York Times. There's certainly people writing, cheering on the possible demise of the New York Times. And it was, you know, probably since the days of Howell Raines and Jason Blair and all that, it was probably the most sort of unsure anybody was in the newsroom.
And have you taken any grief from this crack? The occasion was President Obama was visiting Buffalo, and you made a little historical reference to presidents visiting Buffalo.
He's not going to make news today, no.
No. The last president who made news in Buffalo got shot. Wasn't it McKinley? Let's not put that one in the paper.
I've taken absolutely no grief about that, which is the one thing when I heard I said that, I will say something very curious about the whole film experience when I saw it. I don't remember saying that in particular. I remember a lot of those conversations under torture. I couldn't have remembered that Andrew was there. He really did blend in after a while, and I just simply don't remember him being there for half those things. So to see it now, it's a little like, oh, God, it's very, very strange. No, I'm worried people in Buffalo are going to make fun of me. I grew up very close to Buffalo. It's very, very close to my heart, the Bills, the Sabres, Flutie over Johnson. So I hope they don't take it personally.
I think there might be a statute of limitations for those sort of things. You know, McKinley's assassination was
I don't think it's, you know, I'm being that insensitive at this point. I think maybe that joke is safe.
Bruce, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bruce Hedlund, media editor of The New York Times. He's featured in the new documentary, Page One, A Year Inside The New York Times.